she told me that she had had inner discomfort of the hatred we two brothers harbored against each other, and that she had so many times, but always unsuccessfully, tried to get close to me and make herself visible to me, while I dwelt down there in the horrible darkness. It had caused her such great difficulties and inconveniences to come into the hell realm, where she knew I existed, and then to walk around there, searching for me. It had nearly exceeded her powers. Finally, she had found me, but could not make herself known. She had finally had to give up doing something for me. But, she said, luckily there was one that was stronger than me and also so full of compassion for you, that he never let you out of sight, but used every opportunity to blow on the flames of remorse, which, like a small hot coals, was deeper under pit of your soul in a stifling ash pile of hatred and hardness. He kept me always knowledgeable about what happened to you, and finally, he came with good tidings, that you were saved. Since then I wanted to come to you, but was not permitted to visit you until now. We went to my home. There, we talked long together of everything I had to endure, all that I suffered. Finally, I suggested a curiosity about how long I would stay where I was. Then she answered, that I may soon have to go down to earth again, where being reborn as a small child. This I could not quite understand, but she said that otherwise I could never arrive at any real happiness. It was what her spiritual leader had told her. Although she had initially found it difficult to understand this talk of a rebirth in the world of matter, now she had just witnessed how her foster mother, after long and great suffering, finally agreed to go into the matter to undergo a new life, and so being born as a little child in the same area where she lived as a strict mother Saijin. This took me deep. I took Magnhild's hand and asked her to talk more about how this was possible, and how to behave, if you wanted to go that way. Do not ask me, she said, I'm so ignorant and stand alone wondering and trembling before such a fate, as also must be mine. When we then went together to Ulf, who worked in a different place, although he was at first very surprised at the strange talk about the rebirth of the earth, but he gradually became acquainted with this thought. And some time later, he was determined to go that route. I remember how he and became numb, and one day he was gone. Wherever he went, I could never discover. I long fought against an inner feeling which urged me to follow him, for I guessed that the life down there waiting for me would be full of trials and hardships, but finally, I could not resist the voice in my mind. I gave myself up, though not with any joy, but with free will and a vague hope of being able to make up some of what I, in my former life, had been violated. So I also walked the strange way down in the world of trials, to atone, but oh how weak was not the driving force of this my decision. I was more afraid than I was strengthening, I was more puzzled than I was ready. I followed an inner call, which attracted me, but I did not know why, but I had no idea where it carried me. So it happened that after nearly 400 years staying in the spirit world's lowest spheres, I was again a little child on earth. Next chapter is a lock of her hair. 3. A lock of her hair. I was born this time in Sweden. It was the King Valdemar's time. My father was of the king's relatives, had by birth and riches more than by personal merits, gained a prominent position in society. From him I have hardly any memory. He was most out there on battles and was killed in a war with the Danes. It was actually my mother who led my upbringing, but no one may therefore think that I became a pampered mother pig. She was a harsh and heartless woman. Even at the age of 15, I got by her own hand, taste the behind smacking. This made, of my nature, fierce temper, defiant and wild. Now when I compare my youth then and during my last earthly life, I cannot otherwise than to amaze me at how much similarity of these two periods. Comment logic in the light of the repetition principle. Footnote. As Martinus saw it to be as a cosmic principle, in force for all? Ro. It seemed to me as if I had not taken a step forward in my development. The same hard mind controlled me, yet, notwithstanding all that I suffered, and the same stringent treatment I received even now beginnings. This was perhaps not so strange, because I had the same mother as last time, and Mother Saijin, with all her faults and virtues, came back as the equally influential as stringent Martha. It is strange to see how external conditions and circumstances are repeated from life to life. I have seen it with others than with me. Again, pure logic act. Repetition principle mentioned just above, from Martinus. Row comment, perhaps to imagine it appear that a certain part of one's karma has not had time to be drawn up in one life but must be done again under similar circumstances in a subsequent life, until the part is completed. King Valdemar's time as picture search on Google. Even now my mother died early, and barely 20, I took, as the only son, the great estate in possession. I had been given, one by the demands of the time then, a good education in all knightly sports, the bookish knowledge however, was bad. One of my first doings, I need and shame tell. It was a beautiful spring morning that year, I had taken over the farm. With a bow over my shoulder, I went far and wide in the woods after the game. In a glade far away, I saw something that moved. I crept closer and thought, it could be a prey, but it was only a few goats, which went into grassland. I was going to turn back the other way, then some clear horn songs pulled me closer. The shepherd sat on a rock and played horns. She was fair with rosy cheeks and golden hair, who stood like a halo on her head. She was a little startled when I came out of the woods, but calmed down when she saw that I was not any road path robber. What is your name, my beautiful troll girl? I asked. My name is Gudrun, she replied, but not a troll, I'm just shepherd maid as you can see. Is that your goats? Yes, indeed, and my father's. And who's your father? He's a strict master, and we live over there on the ridge in the cottage you can see where rises a blue smoke out of the chimney. He has come home now and put on the stove. I must hurry home and find out the midday meal. Will you be every day here with your goats? No, not always. When there is bad weather we stay at home, and for the rest, we also operate in other directions. But who are you, yourself, asking so much? A young knight, seeking a bridesmaid. Are you a real knight? You are the first person I've met. And you're the girl I'm looking for. I think not. I fit badly to such a beautiful knight. Self are you far fairer, though you do not know about it. But coarse clothes and golden spurs do not go hand in hand. That thing can be helped. Meet me here tomorrow and I will give you a golden hairpin, such as the bridesmaids have in King's Hall. Until now had her eyes shone of joy of life, but now she became serious. Do not hurt me, knight, I am a poor maid and ask not to be otherwise. I took her waist, pulled her to me, and pressed a kiss on those hot lips. She let herself be taken. She lay for a moment on my chest, then she tore herself away from me and ran away. It is easy to understand that we met again not one but several times. At first, I had the honest intention to take her to wife, and saved not on promises of it. But not the promises of rank and wealth that attracted her, it was her newly awakened pure love she gave me so completely, so without any ulterior motives. She knew nothing about the world, she knew nothing about the dangers lurking around her, she went to our meetings so secure, so certain, only Vedas, who is passed by a large and strong feeling. How much different had not been my fate turns out, if I remained faithful to the affection I felt for this good girl, so richly endowed with both heart and head. But my lower nature prevailed. Pride inside whispered, do not take you with her at your side, gain access to King Valdemar's hoof, where your heart are. Separate yourself from her soon, she's just a hindrance. Shame on me, that was what I did. I stroked her out, as one obliterates a miscalculation. Well, I heard roundabout, she had been giving birth to a child, but I did nothing for her and she never sought me up. She knew hardly know who I was. I had never told her my name and surely had she never researched for me. So ended this ugly deed, that yet after many centuries makes redness of shame on my cheeks. I really came to King Valdemar's hoof, picture, from afar, I was of course his friend. There was conducted a cheerful and funny life because the king surrounded himself with happy young knights and beautiful maidens, who entered the dance late into the night. But no one could compete in beauty with the lovely and jejured. From the first moment I saw her, I was seized with a longing that I have not felt before. I was enchanted by her. I wanted to get her, bring she as a wife into my yard. But I was not the only one who sought her favor. There were at court also a fellow, Eric, who was very superior in many respects. He had received his education in Germany and was able to both interpret scripture, engrave on parchment and play the lute. He wrote poems and sang languorous love songs, by which he twisted the heads on the court beauties. In sports, however, I was his superior. Virgin and Jetjerd was me at first well open, but I also saw to my indignation how she was enchanted by Eric's songs. So it happened that one evening, when the court was gathered to play and joke, that Junker Eric was asked to compose a song for the girl he put the highest price at. We sat around a big log fire in the hall. It was a cold winter day. He was lying on a bearskin on the floor and plucked lute. We waited in silent expectation. So he got up and started singing. I still remember the words, which form the refrain of the ballad, "Who of all bridesmaids' beauty is worth the price, if not the noble maiden Ingjerd? I am your guard." Ingjerd sat on a stool in front of the fire. I sat as far to the side that the shadow hid me. I could therefore watching her unseen, and I saw the flames on her cheeks steps to catch up with flames of fire. While I sat there and drilled my eyes at her, I swore myself an oath. I must own her, even it would cost blood. When the singer fell silent, broke out acclaim. Both Eric and Ingjerd were everyone's favorites. Many shouting into the mouth of another, "He will have a reward. A beautiful reward, he must have." And so they turned to the king, he would sentence. There was silence in the courtroom. "I think," said King Valdemar, "that Junker Eric need yet another string to his instrument. Let him twist it a curl from Virgin and Jetjerd's hair." Again a cheer murmur. But now darkness fell upon my eyes. I rushed out. A few days later I met Ingjerd alone on a trail in the woods. She had rosy cheeks and snow in the hair, which stuck out under the cap, but those beautiful eyes shone not like before. "Where do you go so lonely, Virgin?" I asked politely. "You do not fear robbers? The woods are not safe." "I feel no fear when I go to the Holy Godmother's chapel, but will you follow me and pray for my soul, and I thank you." "You talk as if you were in purgatory." "Yes. No better. I have not been well, since Junker Eric went away with some of my beautiful hair. I am so saddened, but what could I do? It was the king's command. I shall require it back to you, as sure as I am called Dag Helgason." "You cannot, because Junker Eric traveled this morning, and where? He did not say. And you know what he said when we parted, 'With this I drag you after me.' He laughed and cried at the same time. He was so strange that I've never seen him before." She suddenly became quite sobering and went for a while silently at my side. "Knight's ache," she said finally. "Do you think it can be no witchcraft in it, that he have some of my hair?" "How do you mean? Do you think that binds? No one can know where the devil has his ways, but if so, I know a safe medium." "What? Give me a lock from the other side of your head, and I will fight to the blood too." A tinkling laughter interrupted my bravado. "No, now you are too wise, Sir Knight," she said mockingly. "How would it be of me, poor child, if two cavaliers tearing my hair in opposite directions?" I felt a little flat and was silent. We had reached a steady stream, which despite the cold, was still open and put an obstacle in our way. She looked hesitantly around. "Would you carry me over, Knightake?" she said in a friendly voice. "Nothing would rather be," I replied, bent down and lifted her by my arms, lightly as if she were a baby bird. She threw both arms around my neck. There was a shiver of unutterable bliss through my entire being. Why must I put her down again on the other shore? Why did I not carry her so, throughout all her life? "Thank you," she said softly and squeezed my hand. "Fine and Jedger," I said, and knelt on the side. "Be mine, and by all the saints I will bind your hair lids." She leaned down and kissed my forehead. "For when the dagger is loose in its sheath, need I say that it was Magnhild, from last / former life. I had met in Ingjerd's person and that Eric was not anyone other than my former brother Ulf, The following spring was our wedding, and I was both proud and glad when I got to bring the same highborn as fair virgin in Jedger, as housewife home to my farm. So far, so well, but now it was to fulfill the promise I so dearly had sworn. I was driven thereto not only by the sanctity of the promise, but even more of jealousy. And Jedgerd often blurred out words, which suggested she secretly went and thought of the man, who wore some of her hair. She was heavy-tempered and sealed. Was it magic that bound her? This thought gave me no rest, but where could I find him? I had just lost his tracts. However, the political situation had undergone a major change. In the same year we got married, did the king's brothers, the dukes Magnus and Eric, rebelled against their crown brother. At the head of a Danish army they beat his vanguard at Hofta, and Valdemar had to, from the kingdom and crown, flee to Norway. Magnus had himself proclaimed as king and now stood before his coronation in Uppsala. Although we did not belong to his court, we wanted to join to show that we, by any party inside, stood against him. There were many people gathered. In King's House was held, after the coronation, a great feast, and there were also we invited. Everything was solemn and stiff. It was not as in Waldemar's days. When the party had continued for a while, stood a man on the other end of the hall, snapped on a lute and began to sing. It was him. And Jedgerd became pale as a linen, and I had to bite my lip to keep still. When he had finished, he came up to us. He had, while he was singing, caught sight of Jedgerd. "Well, I knew that we would see each other again," he said, deeply staring at for her. He had not seen me yet. "I wear by my heart talisman, which I sometimes receive bids through, from the one who brought it before me." And Jedgerd was so upset that she could not utter a word. Then I stood up. "Your talisman seems not to be well informed," I said emphatically in my voice, "when he has not been able to tell that Jedgerd is now my wife." "Sorry, Sir Knight, but my talisman has nothing to tell about you," he replied in a pointed tone. "God's cross. Give me back what you carry by your heart, or at St. Peter's name, I tear it away from you, even if it would also tear with the heart." It came to a violent altercation, which turned into a scuffle. I grabbed my rival for the chest and would soon have put him on the floor, unless the other guests hurried to and separate us. The commotion attracted a general resurrection, and from the high seat heard the king's stern voice, "Is there anyone who disturbs the peace of the king's hallway? He shall go away, before my hand is used against him." I was literally thrown out of the farm and had to alone return to our place. Into the king's room I dared not return. And Jedgerd soon came after. Ashamed and heartbroken over what has happened, she wanted that we should immediately do our return trip. But I had decided to stay, to once again see my rival in the face. Early the following morning I crept disguised into the city and hid my promise at the royal mansion of a squire in the king's entourage. I found out where Eric lived. He followed the Hof as a memory singer, and had his room in the loft. I went boldly unasked, as I was a peasant who had important news to tell. I was let in, but I was not barely inside the door until I ran on my opponent. He had immediately recognized me and snatched a sword that hung on the wall. I myself had only a dagger in the girdle. It came to a furious fencing, where I ended up badly wounded in the right arm, and sank down. People flocked to, and I was carried out and thrown into prison, as I, for the second time, had broken the king's peace. There I sat now in a cold and damp dungeon and had plenty of time to ponder my temerity, but it could not be undone. King Magnus was mightily displeased, and had not Jedgerd and a friend of her, who was the king's confidant, put out for me, so probably had my head dropped. Now I had to serve my sentence with 3 years of hard prison. And Jedgerd I saw only once during that time. It was shortly after my judgment had fallen. She had asked to speak to me, but just had nothing to say. She was taciturn and strange. I had expected that she would cry and be heartbroken, but she was still and silent, sat with downcast eyes and stared straight ahead. When I asked if she wanted to be faithful to me in the 3 years I should sit inside, she answered very quietly, "I will try," but it was as if she had been talking to herself. Only when she was to leave, It was as if she noticed me. She fell on my neck and sobbed, "Achache. Why did you do this to me? I'm so scared. So scared, lonely as I am. Never will I get peace. Never." When I became free again and returned to my farm, I was met there by the news that Injured had disappeared. She was away from home, only accompanied by a faithful servant, for, as she said, visit her parents. But there was rumor that she had never been there. Her disappearance was shrouded in a strange mystery. The general feeling was that she and her servant were victims of the robbers, who made the roads unsafe. I went and brooded over her fate. Was she dead, or had she sought out the lute player and thrown herself into his arms? True, no one had seen them together, but he had the talisman that drew her. A voice inside me said that he was the wife robber, but how to be sure, and where could I find them? Then it was someone who told me that on the ridge lived an old woodcutter, who was lucid. He was able to track down lost things and cattle. It was at the time not so unusual and was therefore also not so strange. I sent for him. He sat long silent in the corner, holding a piece of clothing, which Injured had pressed it against his forehead. Finally he began to speak. He told how he saw her journey. It had gone first to Linköping, where she was taken into an old shelter. Here, she had masked as an Englishman with a servant as a bodyguard, ridden through the south gate. They had ridden a few hours on the main road and then turned aside to the right on a narrow road, but there he had difficulty following their trail, and soon he lost them completely out of sight. I became impatient. You must follow her on. Can you look her up and say where she is, so you get an ample recompense? Is there any jewelry, which she kept much of? It usually provide good leadership, he said. I was looking into her stash and found a neck chain of gold, which she inherited from her mother and often used. Now it lay aside thrown among a heap of rubbish. Apparently, she had taken it off and did not dare wear it on her escape. The old man held long the gold chain between two hands. I sat in tense anticipation. Now I see her again, he said, but I do not know if that's where she is now, or if it is something that has been. What do you see? I asked eagerly. She is not alone. There is a young man at her feet with his head on her lap. He plays the lute and sings. Death of God. It is him, that thief, I broke out. Tell me where he is, and I'll stick him down before her eyes. Calm down, sir, if you rage so. I lose track again. I tried to hold me still, but it tempted patience, for it took long before the old man could reconnect to the track. Now brightens some, but I see it also vague, he continued. There is a large hall with heavy beams in the ceiling. I see many people, richly dressed, but bearing other costumes than we are used to here, and I think they speak another language, but I cannot quite hear. A high lord comes into the courtroom. He looks happy. At St. Peter Christ, I think it is our gracious King Valdemar himself. Miss Injured is sitting quietly in a corner and looks sad. The king goes back and pats her on the shoulder. She smiles at him. They talk to each other, but what they say, I cannot hear. Do not you see him with lute? I interrupted violently. Quiet, quiet. No, now it is again dark for my eyes. What do you want me to do? I asked in utter excitement. Bring me a cloth, as your wife Injured had closest to her body. It usually helps when everything else is shortcomings. I hurried to get what he asked for. He held with both hands the linen for the face. So he sat very long silenced. Finally he got up, put down the linen and wanted to go. No, do not go, I cried. Tell me first what you saw. What I saw, I will not tell, replied the old man very seriously. I was furious, shaking him by the collar and commanded him to speak, if he had life there. Lord, he replied, looking at me with his deep, strange eyes, your threats frighten me not. Anyone who has gift to see, must go gently, so that he does not rouse more evil in this world than already exists. What's your name, O man? Adel. It stuck me. Do you have a daughter named Gudrun? I had a daughter. Is she dead? Do not ask him who asks himself. You are a strange man. Take this ring, as a thank you for what you told me. I stroked a precious gold ring from my finger. Keep your gold. Gift of sight, is not given to all? He mastered me with his piercing eyes, so I could not ask for more, nor hold him back when he went out of the room. Little did I know then, that I would come to revisit this old wise, under even more curious conditions. So, she had visited Eric. The damned lock of hair had been practicing its magic power, so that she could not resist. Perhaps he did not know anything about it. So then they had together fled to King Valdemar in Norway. There I had, broadly what I wanted to know, but what was it Adel had seen at last? The idea tortured me, so I could be crazy? Revenge. It cried in me. Now blood have to flow. Then I could with a pilgrimage to the Holy Sepulchre do penance for my sins. But first blood, his blood. Maybe even hers. Only escorted by a squire, I rode a beautiful spring morning from my ancestral farm and headed towards the west. After many adventures, I came one day, in summer, to Oslo, where the expelled Valdemar currently had settled and where he held a sort of court with a few people who had been faithful to him. At last I was at the target, and now I was determined to go straight to my deed. But the goal had turned aside. An old friend from the time when I also belonged to King Valdemar's court, told that Eric, accompanied by his legally wed wife and Gjedger, had visited the King of Norway. But recently, with a merchant ship sailed to Denmark. Legally wed. I exclaimed. What would it mean? Did they not know that she, by a church wedding, was mine? Yes, he replied, but while you were sitting in jail, King Magnus on wife and Gjedger's request to the Pope, obtained that your marriage with the assailant, who interfered the royal peace, was declared dissolved. Lesan, old Oslo. And this has no one told me before now? After what Eric himself had told, the wife and Gjedger, since she was discharged from you, had secretly visited him, after which they quietly married and immediately thereafter gone to the trip to Norway. She had wanted it so, as to avoid family involvement. As no one more heard of them, no knew where she went, so it was believed that she was on a trip to her parents and had been robbed and murdered. I now began to understand the context. She had kept the marriage dissolution so secret, that perhaps no one in the courtyard knew of it. I was moreover not a liked master and thereto marked by the punishment. It was therefore not surprising that all pulled away from me. Self, I did also know issues until the embarrassing uncertainty drove me to seek cattle. But what was the reason that they left Norway? I asked. My friend sat silent a long while. Finally he said, so softly that in a whisper, the king. As he expelled them? No, he would rather keep her too close. The blood rose in me to the head. Involuntarily, I took after the dagger, I carried in my girdle. My friend took me by the arm. Silence, he said. I do not think, by so doing you have any to avenge. Well as king, after all what he suffered and, despite his pilgrimage, yet a dangerous fellow for both one and another, but I have reason to believe that he, in this case, is burning his carven vein. I do not see it unlikely that the king was her possessive intrusive, but the sudden departure makes me believe that he has become heavily rebuffed. It was thus what Adel saw, but did not want to disclose for fear that I would molest me against the crowned adulterer. With the next ship south, I sailed to Denmark. I had to after them, who devastated my life, and put them for justice. Well, had the worst revenge lust somewhat subsided, when I heard how everything had elapsed, but still cried a voice within me at revenge, still was my dagger loose in its sheath. A whole year one searched for them. How I finally found them, I would like to briefly tell. My searches then brought me first to Nyborg, where the Danish king held his court, but no had seen or heard of the Swedish singer. I was now so destitute that I alone as a beggar was wandering from house to house, from castle to castle through the entire Finn.dk, but still to no avail. But one day I went to Jutland, Denmark, and came to Skanderborg, a small town inland. Next to the town was one of the moats with walls surrounding the old castle, who was owned by a Danish nobleman. There it would be a big celebration, and the whole town was in motion to meet the guests from far away. With companions of the squire, they rode through the streets towards the palace. While I stood there and gaped, I suddenly saw a rider who I recognized as the one I was looking for. He rode in the company of an elderly knight and two noble ladies sitting in the armchairs, and one who rode astride.